And I think I have with me on the line Rabbi Zalkern.
Good morning, Ilan.
Good morning.
How are you?
I found a nice lady here that helped me and we fixed it.
You see what they said? They say never give up. If you want something done, you persist with it, you will get it done.
That's it.
All I'm very happy. Thank you for getting it done.
Sometimes some little miracles around.
Yeah. That is
so
very cool.
Parshat HaShavua.
Yes. Parshat HaShavua is Bahar B'chukotai. We'll try and go through whatever we can. And next week, hopefully, we'll do Shavua, God willing, which is coming up on that Saturday. So, Saturday night. But Bahar B'chukotai is two portions, and one of the things that we read is on the mountain of Sinai, excuse me, I have a little bit of a cough. God communicates to Moses the laws of the sabbatical year. Every seventh year, all work on the land should cease, and its produce becomes free for the taking, for all, for man, and for beast, so on and so forth. Now, seven sabbatical cycles are followed by a 50th year, the Jubilee year, Yovel, on which work on the land ceases, and all, you know, the servants that you have are set free. God promised that if the people of Israel will keep his commandments, they will enjoy material prosperity and dwell secure in their holy land. It's interesting because I remember, you know, there was a story that I heard once. An international dealer in high-end fabrics once visited the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Schneerson in New York, and this person, this dealer, he was, you know, an active member of the community, the Chabad community in England, and the businessman, he was obviously very familiar with the Rebbe's advice and blessings that impacted lives, so on and so forth. And at one point in that discussion, he put forth a tongue-in-cheek proposal for the Rebbe to partner with him, the entrepreneur in a business venture. And the Rebbe turned serious and said, fair enough. Remember, though that in a partnership, neither partner gets to make a move without the consent of the others. In other words, I need to consent you, you need to consent me.
Yeah.
So we have a deal.
Yeah.
And though skeptical, obviously, he agreed. And he said, well, what's the knowledge of the Rebbe? The man was nevertheless excited about the opportunity to partner with a holy man, with a tzaddik, and ready to take the deal. The Rebbe then advised him to take a large purchase of a certain material that hadn't even been on the man's radar screen. And the dealer, you know, he went home and he placed a large order of this unusual fabric. And when he reported back to New York, the Rebbe responded that the purchase was way too conservative, way too low. A much larger quantity should have been purchased. So the man went out and bought the astronomical quantities of this stuff. You know, he paid a huge fortune to pay for the shipment, so on and so forth. Shortly after the acquisition of all these materials, it began to go down. It began to plummet. So perhaps he thought maybe now is a good time to sell it. But obviously, as he promised, he contacted his other partner, the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, absolutely not, do not sell it now. As the price of material continued to go down, so did the man's spirit. And, you know, every day he's watching, losing himself, losing the money. He said, listen, this is crazy.
It's like trading.
Exactly. So the Rebbe said, don't sell. And, you know, facing financial ruin, he began to make him think, did I make a mistake, you know, go away from the community, distance himself. And the bleeding continued for several months. And one day, the price took a little slight tick back up, and he began to consult the Rebbe, saying, now listen, I've just come out of this ruin, and I need to sell, come on, please. The Rebbe said, no, don't worry, you're not going to sell now. Shortly thereafter, a famous fashion designer put out a line that called for extensive use of unusual material. So the man in England had the market cornered. When he reported to the Rebbe, he was told that the time had come to sell. The inventory went very fast. The man made millions in profit. And he excitedly boarded a plane, you know, to go and hand the Rebbe a check for his share. And the Rebbe declined. He said, requested that the man give the money to a charity instead. The man then asked the Rebbe if he could perhaps pursue another venture together. You know, he sees, wow, something that worked. The Rebbe smiled as he said, you know, I'm sorry. as they say in Yiddish, you're a shvacha shutav, means a very weak partner. Now, if we look, you know, when I was thinking about that story, I'm like, well, just look at this Yisrael portion. It's amazing how, you know, God puts things in your head when you're trying to learn a certain thing. And if you look in this week's Torah portion, the opening of the Torah portion, we are taught that at Mount Sinai, God told Moses to instruct the children of Israel regarding the observance of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. Yeah. And upon entering the land of Israel, they were to count the years in cycles of seven. For 6 years, they should work the soil and reap its fruit. But on the seventh year, it should be Shabbat. It should be rest unto God. Excuse me. No sowing, no pruning, no picking, so on and so forth. And everything should be set aside for spiritual pursuit.
Not Shabbaton.
Right. And the Torah then goes on to say, if you will say, what will we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we do not sow, we don't gather our crops. What are we going to eat? We're going to be starving. And what does God say? I will ordain my blessing for you in the sixth year, and you will yield a crop sufficient for 3 year period. In other words, the divine blessing that would enrich the soul as a result of the observance of the Shemitah, of the seventh year, would compensate threefold for the perceived loss of revenue when you have to lie low. Now, Israel's entire economy was built around agriculture.
Yeah.
And to just shut down for an entire year was an act of really self-sacrifice, a bold statement of trust in God. And indeed, in those early years, when all the citizens, fully observed the Shemitah, the blessing was in the soil, just as promised. Nobody went hungry as a result. Life was good. It was only after some people decided, as the expression goes, to kill the goose that laid the golden egg and try to gain that extra edge by working the seventh year, that things began to fall apart. Now, we can talk at great length about our faith in God and our trust in His absolute wisdom, but do we put our money where our mouth is? You know, we could always say, yeah, I believe in God. Sure, I believe in God. Everything is wonderful. But when you kind of have to put your money where your mouth is, do we really believe in God?
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily when we are tied to the state that our real faith is put to the test. But sometimes it can happen in the office or in the bank. Or, you know, even you're walking in the streets, the supermarket. So whether it is keeping, you know, the Shabbat holy, sending our children to Torah, to Jewish day schools, Hebrew schools, the Hebrew school, whatever it may be, or going the extra mile to keep kosher in the kitchen, Shemitah reminds us that Mount Sinai really represented a bridge between theory and practice.
Yeah.
Between faith
and
action.
Yeah.
Trust and resolve. And upon that mountain, the God, Almighty God, took us as His partner in the business of creation. And He's telling us, don't be a shvachashuv, don't be a weak partner. Trust in me. I will help you. You know, people think that everything that I do in my life is all because of me. Everything is me, is me, is me. I make the greatest business deal. It's very nice to make the greatest business deal. Who gave you the ability to do that? Obviously, that was God. God gives us the ability to have what we need for our family, and so on and so forth. So, to just have the trust in God is what's going to pull us through, and what's going to help us, and what's going to give us everything that we need. And that's what the Shemitah talks and teaches us all about for our daily life and for our communal life.
That's a nice parsha.
It is. That's just beautiful. You know, there's so many different laws in the Bina. You can only take one law at a time, but yes, it's a very, very important and beautiful parsha.
Now, Shabbat services.
Friday evening are 7 o'clock, followed by Saturday morning, 9:30, and the Kiddush every week is there, and the food. And Sunday morning is 8:15, followed by breakfast at the Shahr, and Monday and Thursday is the community minyan at the Paris House at 7:15.
That's great. Rabbi, I want to wish you a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, you too, and we'll talk next week.
And we'll talk next week. We'll dedicate it to Shavuot.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, see you. Have a wonderful week and a good Shabbat.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.